As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, Chelsea agree sale terms with Todd Bowley's consortium. Chelsea chuck away 3 points against Wolves. Chelsea win the league. Chelsea avoid relegation in the most dramatic of circumstances. A fairly big weekend then, Chelsea-wise. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Yes, indeed, listener. What a weekend it was for the Blues across all levels. To talk you through it, it's me, Matt Davis-Adams, alongside The Athletic's Chelsea expert, Simon Johnson.
I think I have the bags to show for the weekend.
Double duty.
They've got darker, if that's possible. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Sam Parkin's also back with us. Sam, you've had a big weekend too, some of it Chelsea-related.
Yeah. Feels a long time ago, that Wolves game. It's all a bit hazy. I'm going to do my utmost to produce this morning, though.
Yeah, I think we're all feeling like that. Before we get going, I'd just like to say, Sam Kerr. Right, on with our regularly scheduled podcasting. The big story since last we met is the fact that the sale of the club is almost done. So that's where we'll start today.
Chelsea Football Club says terms have been agreed for a sale to a consortium led by the American businessman Todd Bowley, who's a co-owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers baseball team. Chelsea was put up for sale by Roman Abramovich shortly before he was sanctioned for his links to Vladimir Putin. The deal is worth more than £4 billion.
In the wee small hours of Saturday morning, Chelsea released a statement confirming terms have been agreed for a new ownership group led by Todd Bowley, Clear Lake Capital, Mark Walter and Hans Jörg Weiss to acquire the club. In the statement, it said of the total investment being made, £2.5 billion will be applied to purchase shares in the club. Such proceeds will be deposited into a frozen UK bank account with the intention to donate 100% to charitable causes, as confirmed by Roman Abramovich. UK government approval will be required for the proceeds to be transferred from the frozen UK bank account. In addition, the proposed new owners will commit £1.75 billion in further investment for the benefit of the club. This includes investments in Stamford Bridge, the academy, the women's team and King's Meadow, and continued funding for the Chelsea Foundation. So good news then, Simon. First of all, do we know why it was confirmed at such an odd time?
Well, as always, I have a little story about that. And it's not that exciting, but I'm on my couch, right? I'm on my couch. I'm watching some quality nostalgic television at that stupid time in the morning. We're talking 1:30, 2 in the morning. It's a retro show. Now, maybe American listeners aren't aware of this show, but it was a review of 1993 Top of the Pops. Okay? So we're talking highbrow intellectual TV. And then I looked at my phone. I had a message from a radio station saying, can you come on the radio to talk about the statement? And I was like, oh, what have I missed? Oh, only just the takeover. finally sort of being ratified, sort of. I did ask Chelsea, sort of getting back to the actual question. I just found it quite bizarre that I had to go from watching Top of the Pops to talking Chelsea takeover. It was a bit of a leap.
I mean, you must have thought, like, boom, shake the room. You had the key, yeah. You had the secret. They called you, well, Mr. Vane, but you managed to get on the radio anyway, yeah.
Well, I could talk about some of the songs. You know, there was Shabba Ranks, Mr. Loverman, Apache Indian, Boom Shakalaka. I think that was the quite a appropriate dance to do at that time in the morning for that takeover statement. Anyway, before I lose any more listeners, so I think there's an element of Chelsea were aware that it was dragging on a bit. I bumped into someone ahead of the Wolves game and sort of said, is that the latest statement that's ever been put out by the club? And I think even they were sort of thinking, right, oh, it's midnight, it's getting on a bit, and it still took another few hours. Obviously, this may be a sign of things to come. You got to think, convert it into LA time. Of course, Todd Boehly, co-owner of the LA Dodgers. So it was about 6 o'clock back in America. So suddenly it makes a bit of sense. But also, I just think it'd been a long day of sort of dotting the I's, crossing the T's. But does any Chelsea fan really care what time the state, you know, it's just, I think anyone connected with this process, ourselves, the wider media, are just relieved that that statement came at all.
Yeah, even if you read it at that time in the morning with bleary eyes, you'd have been feeling young at heart, I think.
yes.
There's no limit to what Chelsea can do now.
Brilliant. those both featured in the show.
Quickly Googles top songs of
1993. Yes, well done.
So what stands in the way of this actually being completed now then, Simon? I mean, not much, presumably. Obviously, Todd Boehly was there on Saturday, but it's done pretty much, right?
Yeah, I mean, officially, there's the talk of the Premier League proper person says, but I think that's already been pretty much done anyway. The government can technically block it because, of course, they've got the licence. They've got to grant the licence for the sale of the club. When a club comes out with that kind of statement, you know, they're not going to put that out unless it's going to happen. The only thing could be is if Todd Boehly watched what happened on Saturday and went, actually, no, I've changed my mind. There's too much work to do here. Goodbye.
VAR, what's this?
Yeah. Yes.
Sam, from a player's perspective, I guess the crutch has been kicked away now, hasn't it, in terms of, you know, they can blame the takeover for what's been happening on the pitch lately. But this must be a massive relief for them as well. You know, maybe not the likes of Tony Rudiger and Andreas Christensen, but if you're a Reece James or a Mason Mount, you know, you might be in line for a new contract. But more importantly, you'll be thinking there's some stability coming our way now.
Yeah, I don't think the players think too far ahead, really. I think they would have been safe in the knowledge that this was going to happen, and hopeful it would have been resolved quickly. So, yeah, I think it's good because I think everyone's been discussing it, haven't they? And there's been a bit of finger pointing and a lot of speculation as to whether the players are down in tools because of this reason. We can't have that excuse now, and it's not going to be an argument that's going to continue for the next few weeks. So, yeah, I think really important to get it finalised. There's something still a little bit sobering about seeing all those empty seats at Stamford Bridge. I'm sure the atmosphere was improved at the weekend. It certainly sounded that way. But, yeah, really good that it seems to be nearing a conclusion and then some plans can be put in place. I did think that as Simon was speaking there. I mean, I don't think it would be a stumbling block necessarily if they didn't qualify for the Champions League this season, but it wouldn't be a less attractive proposition. And it makes you think of Roman Abramovich in that final game against Liverpool. Hopefully it's not going to come down to that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It would have been a whole lot easier if Chelsea had beaten Wolves on Saturday. Yeah, we'll talk over that game next.
Trincao to Chiquinho. So many gold shirts to aim for again. Mendy wasn't sure. And Chelsea are punished by Connor Cody. And what must be going through the minds of Thomas Tuchel and Todd Boehly?
We struggle in executing the match plan from the first to the last minute. And on top of it, we get punished. But we conceded way too many chances today through the whole match.
Oops. Chelsea snatching a draw from the jaws of victory against Wolves at the Bridge. Then 2-0 up and with one foot in the Champions League, the Blues conceded twice late on, including a 97th minute equaliser from Connor Cody to squander another chance to put one foot in next season's Champions League. Oh, Simon, I mean, we were both at the bridge for this one. It looked like Chelsea were absolutely cruising towards it after an incredibly tepid first half. Those two Lukaku goals seemed to have them well placed. But I don't know about you, but I thought it was actually the introduction of Trincão which changed things. A player I knew hardly anything about came on and tore Chelsea to shreds in the time he was on the pitch.
Yeah, but Chelsea were also masters of their own downfall to a little degree. I thought Wolves, given how poor their form was, played pretty well and thoroughly deserved the point. You have to say that they had quite a few chances before and after they scored. But Chelsea, you always felt if Wolves got one, they'd get two. It had that vibe about it. And what on earth, why on earth Chelsea continued to make the same mistake of basically losing the ball like high up the pitch and being sort of left in a 3v3 or a 4v2. I mean, Trincao's goal, if he didn't ping it in the top corner, he had like two or three Wolves players to pick out in the area. Kovacic loses the ball and they're in. It's very frustrating because you're thinking, you're tuning up with 11 minutes to go. What are you doing? See the game out. And the vibe around the place, you could just imagine, oh, that's the win that basically gets them over the line for top four. The Lukaku scores. You know, it would have been such an upbeat sort of vibe. You know, Todd Bowley's there. Or, you know, such a positive occasion. And then, yeah, like I said, I don't know what was more alarming, the fact that they played like they did it 2-0 or how they played after 2-1, because they just looked a complete mess. Rattled, no composure. It's like they'd never sort of defended a lead before in their lives. No one, I don't think, was surprised to see that Wolves get the equaliser. And confidence is at an all-time low, I'd say. That's 8 points from 7 league games since the international break. And they don't have much time to put it right ahead of facing, obviously, Leeds, but perhaps more importantly, or just as importantly, Liverpool in the FA Cup final.
Sam, Thomas Tuchel, obviously a world and European champion and UEFA's coach of the year, but I wonder if there's a question or two to be asked of his game management at the moment. I mean, he brought Saul on for Alonso at half-time, but it took a long time to make another substitution, and it was Malang Sarr coming on to shore things up, which, I mean, fine, I guess, but not really where you want to be. Is he as out of form as his team at the moment?
Yeah, quite possibly. I thought it was a strange substitution. They were getting a lot of joy, weren't they, wide on the right-hand side. You can understand why he wanted to reinforce that area, but I think there was probably better options on the bench, maybe sticking with the same system and just making two wide players track back a little bit more and double up with the wing backs. It's a difficult period for him at the moment as well. But as Simon says, the players have got to take responsibility as well. Maybe missed a bit of control in the middle of the pitch with the two that were in there, Kovacic and Loftus-Cheek. But the way that they were counter-attacked on, even in the first half, I presume that is why Thomas Tuchel changed Azpilicueta and Reece James around in the second half. We've seen him do that recently because of the issue with Azpilicueta's pace recovering. So that was something clearly that was awry in the first period. And yeah, the game could have been put to bed, I suppose, with some chances, but there was a sense of inevitability about it once Trincão scored. He had the one-on-one just shortly after that as well, which I felt he overcomplicated because he'd had such a really good impact to the game. I think he actually tried to go for something really cute when he could have just smashed it into the opposite side. Definitely, I think there'd be some things that Thomas Tuchel would feel this morning he could have done differently. Mason Mount, maybe, to just give them the energy, the control in the middle. Better decision-making as well, I suppose, in the final third. That was lacking. But, yeah, it was a pretty desperate collapse.
Simon, only Watford and Brighton have taken a fewer percentage of their points at home this season than Chelsea, which is an absolutely staggering statistic when you think about it. Have you got a theory as to why that might be? I mean, the home record wasn't great last season, was it, Tuchel? But then you kind of put that down to maybe pandemic ball. But what's behind it?
I think it's quite scary. I started to say, I wrote about this a few weeks ago. And the thing is, I certainly covered their home form. I just think that it's a combination of factors. There's not one straight. Is Tuchel, for starters, has he taken on their attacking play this season? The caveat to that being, no one could have foreseen Lukaku being the disappointment that he's been. Injuries has definitely been a factor. But is there a lack of creativity in midfield generally? And just sloppy mistakes since November, since that goal that Jadon Sancho scored the match after Ben Chilwell does his knee, Chelsea's defending has been awful. The quality, the standards that they set for basically the first year of Thomas Tuchel have not been maintained. So if you're not scoring at one end and you're not keeping clean sheets, inevitably you're going to have a bad record. But of course, the Toti Flies compares badly with the away record, which is one of the best in the league. So it's very odd. I don't think there's one answer for it. Maybe Tuchel's a bit too defensive with that formation. But that, in saying that, there's been so many games where they've, you know, the shot count's read 20-odd to 4 or whatever, and all the stats will say they should be winning games and they don't. You sort of think about teams that have genuinely outplayed Chelsea at home. Man City obviously springs to mind. Brentford, you know, that was just an all-round shocker. But there aren't many. Most of the games they should have won, but they contrive not to. But it's something they have to put right if they're going to become a top team, as in challenging Liverpool, Man City again, because their home records are outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the Leeds game briefly soon, but Chelsea have still got Leicester and Watford to come at Stamford Bridge. And I think at this stage of the season, if you had to pick two teams to face at home, they'd be pretty high up on that list. So a good opportunity to put right the home record. Let's bring some positivity into the chat, Sam, and talk about Romelu Lukaku, because we've been waiting for this. I thought, A, it was notable that he picked up the ball even before the penalty had been confirmed by VAR. He definitely wanted it. And then that kind of almost instinctive finish for the second goal, which was by no means an easy one. This is what we were hoping to see and what we thought we were going to see, you know, in those games against Arsenal and Villa at the start of the season.
I did not think we were going to be having this conversation after half an hour on Saturday. I thought that chance when he was able to pin the Wolves central defender around the edge of the D was the start of it for him. And I just saw the confidence flow back into him. I don't know what you two felt, but I saw a bit of a change in Chelsea at the weekend. I thought there was less square passes, less safe passes, especially in the first half. I thought they went into the front players a bit quicker, whether that was into Lukaku or into Werner and Pulisic running beyond. I definitely thought there was a little bit of a switch in tactics, and whether that was Thomas Tuchel, yeah, thinking we need to get the best out of this guy. We need to mould a system, a way of playing to try and get the best out of Lukaku, which I don't think's necessarily been done so far this season. You know, this guy's a top player. He's got to adapt to, you know, his surroundings and fit into the team ethic. But I thought they played more to his strengths at the weekend is basically what I'm trying to say. And I thought he grew after that chance. And then the second half, I mean, some of the closing down I've not seen from him. The win of the penalty was brilliant play. Yeah, fantastic that he won that and then stuck it away. And there was some really good moments in that second half. Obviously, you know, the best being the finish for the second goal. So a big contrast to what he has produced. And I was really surprised he took him off. I thought that was a mistake. At that stage of the game as well, unless he was absolutely shattered. I thought, keep him on, see if he can get that third, which he looked like he may be able to get. So it was a very, very good performance, the best I can remember, probably since that Aston Villa game that you mentioned.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is sort of something Sam raised. I don't want to be negative, but it really frustrated me in many ways, because I remember one of the pressing runs that Romelu made, I think after he'd scored his second, and he was really pressing Wolves players, like really running and with great energy, and That's not just confidence, that's desire. And that's what's frustrated me most about Lukaku since the interview. Because you could talk about his technical deficiencies, you can call him a flat track bully, you can question whether he's worth 97.5 million. But I've always thought there's a good player there. It's just, Sam might sort of take issue with this, but you can tell when a player is trying or not. And that's what's upset me the most since January, is I just haven't felt that intensity of run. You know, the very basics of chasing an opponent, trying to win the ball back, trying to do something. I haven't felt that. It's been very sort of resigned and stuff. So, but anyway, on a positive note, I agree with Sam. I found it very odd that out of the attacking players, he was the one that was taken off. It kind of knocks him a little bit, I think, from Tuchel. You know, he's got a chance to get a hat-trick. I didn't think Werner was having the greatest game. Pulisic was a bit of hot and cold. So, yeah, I just didn't sort of think that bringing on Havertz for Lukaku was the right move at that time. And inevitably, the cameras then panned to Lukaku when Wolves scored. And it brings a negative vibe around his performance. And Tuchel's asked about Lukaku's performance afterwards. It's a bit of an open goal as far as the media's concerned. Right, go and praise Romelu. And he says, I'm not praising him. Why am I going to praise an individual after a team result like that? Which I understand. And he was right in many ways, because he's like, you know, we've just dropped two crucial points. I'm not going to single anybody out. But, yeah, it just continues that little Lukaku Tuchel story a little bit.
Would you have wanted that, Sam? Would you have wanted the backing from your manager in that situation, you know, if he'd been in the form Lukaku had been and then produced a performance like he did on Saturday, or are you not that bothered about what he says to the media?
I think it's circumstantial. He's had opportunities, hasn't he? If this is a player coming in completely from the cold and producing that, then yeah, you would want a little line on the individual performance. But, you know, he's been around the block, hasn't he, Lukaku? He's cost a hell of a lot of money. He's high pedigree. He's not produced this year, so it probably wasn't the right moment. And when it was happening, when I was covering the game, and he came off, has he done that so he gets a little ovation? And but I think if the Champions League football was secured, then maybe you could have taken that as that. But I doubt it very much. I think that would have been to just give them fresh legs and try and get over the line in what had become a difficult encounter to get the maximum points. So. Yeah, I think it was tactical more than anything, maybe running the clock down. I don't think it was probably for the fans to show their appreciation. It wasn't that good a performance. but yeah, it's certainly the first step towards redemption. And I don't know, would you play him next week? I'd probably come on to that. I think there's an argument to say yes now, because at least it's something that the team's desperately needed. Yeah, it's worked having, you know, a false nine and a bit more mobility maybe up there, but you can't beat someone playing with his attributes at that level. And it may take Liverpool a little bit by surprise.
The good thing again about what happened Saturday was you really heard Romelu's name being sung by the fans for the first time. I think I've heard it sung recently, but not as loudly as that. And Sam sort of jolted my brain there. Thank you. When talking about the sort of bringing him off to get the vote, because there was actually an ovation. There was a loud round, and he also replied in kind with it. And I just thought, well, look, there's something good. There seems to have been a mending of a building of bridges there between the fans and Lukaku, and that could sort of play a little part in the end of the season. Hopefully, you know, for a positive end that. You know, if the fans are behind him, then that might sort of see him continue that form for the final few games.
So a point means Chelsea third, 67 points. Arsenal a point back, and then Spurs in fifth place. They are 5 points behind the Blues. Chelsea go to Leeds on Wednesday night. Massive game for both teams this. Simon, is it a benefit that it's away from home, not only because of Chelsea's struggles at home, but because Leeds come into it in the relegation zone? It's going to be a testy old atmosphere, as it always is, Leeds v Chelsea, but they'll be nervous, won't they? And Chelsea look to play on that, I guess.
Everton.
Yes.
I'm sure on a podcast I made a banterous comment about the A-team one show. I think it is a very sort of similar, if you're in trouble and if you can find them, maybe you should call the Chelsea team, because Chelsea are just sort of handing out gifts left, right and centre. If you're Leeds, you just basically watch how they play against Everton, and you're Jesse Marsh, you say, right, get stuck into them, repeat that performance. Their minds will be on the FA Cup final potentially. It's a great time to play Chelsea. Like you said earlier, Matt, about, oh, if you could write down teams that Chelsea would like to play at home, Leicester and Watford. I bet there's quite a few teams go, oh, actually, I wouldn't mind playing to Chelsea at the moment. But it's Chelsea Leeds. Hopefully the rivalry will stir everybody up. They just need a win to take into the cup final to feel, have some confidence. You're right to say Leeds are, you know, that was a devastating loss for them at Arsenal on Sunday. They're now in the relegation zone. A few weeks ago, they looked like they'd got the results needed to pull themselves clear. And you sort of wonder sort of what the effect it's done to them psychologically to see Burnley and Everton catch them up. But yeah, it's a massive game for Chelsea. Forget Leeds. get the win. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of Chelsea fans would love to sort of get a result that sends Leeds down or helps send them down.
And of course, just to stretch the A-team analogy to a torturous point, because of the sanctions, Mr. T, in this case being Thomas Tuchel, won't be getting on their plane because they've got to drive there. Hopefully they'll at least save face. Lukaku starts, doesn't he, Sam? He's got to after those two goals.
Should have shoehorned a BA in there, mate, as well.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I like that.
Does he start? I don't know. Obviously, it's become more important than maybe we would have predicted a week ago. But he has to make changes, I think, to freshen it up because of the manner of the performance at the weekend. Whether Lukaku goes in this one or he starts him on Saturday, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. But yeah, I don't think sticking to the same shape and the most experienced, the best players available to him for this one will be the way to go. I think you have to look at the players that are on the bench and just freshen it up a little bit. Freshen it up. I think they're going to get the points they require. I think it's probably going to be 4 points, isn't it? Looking at the games Arsenal and Tottenham have got to guarantee it. They should get them in the two remaining home games. But yeah, I'd definitely make changes for this game and give players an opportunity to rest and state their claim.
Remember Hakim Ziyech, Simon? What's happened to him? Hasn't started since Brentford.
Yeah, very odd in that he seemed to have a good run of form, didn't he, earlier in the year, starting regularly. And then, yeah, clearly Tuchel doesn't like what he's seeing. Perhaps the sort of the uglier side of the game, the sort of the pressing, the sort of tracking back. But Tuchel has been picking from a much smaller group of players now for a few weeks, and maybe that's part of the problem in that why they're looking so tired and not sort of seeing games out, etc. I want to ask a question: will anyone care if Chelsea finish fourth and Arsenal, they're the favourites, obviously, to finish above them? Is it a big deal? For me, obviously, speaking impartially, I don't think it matters whether you finish second, third or fourth, as long as you finish in the top four. But I understand from a club rivalry point of view, hearing Arsenal fans giving it a bit of lip, especially when Chelsea had such a big lead over them, might be a little bit annoying. But I just sort of think if you finish in the top four, that's all that matters, particularly when you've had such a disparity of season where Chelsea played over 60 games and competed for trophy after trophy, whereas Arsenal have basically not had anything else to play for since January. And I just sort of think some perspective will have to be applied when all that sort of ribbing goes on from Arsenal fans if they manage to overtake them.
That game between Leeds United and Chelsea kicks off at 7:30 UK time on Wednesday night. Of course, we'll fill you in on what happened on Thursday. So that was the men. Whilst they continue to underwhelm, the same can't be said for the women. Anybody say three-peat?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Press high. Four steps into a mistake, and that's Kerr! Absolutely spectacular! Sam Kerr with her 20th Thunder SL goal of the season. And she looks to have rubber stamped another Thunder SL title for Chelsea. And in some style as well. How about that from Sam Kerr? That is world class. First touch off the chest, second on the volley. Thank you very much indeed. A striker at the top of her game.
We haven't made it easy this season, but that's what's made it even sweeter. We've won the last few games by one goal, and then to do it today like we did, it shows the heart of the team, and we never gave up. I don't know how many teams would have coped with losing as many players as we did. So this one is super special.
There it is, full time. Chelsea have done it again. My goodness, they were made to work for this one. Behind twice, but powering through in a peerless second half performance to retain the WSL title for the third time in a row. Chelsea imperious and Women's Super League champions for the fifth time in their history. Celebrations can start. Chelsea champions of the Women's Super League 2022. Full time at King's Meadow. Chelsea 4, Manchester United 2.
An amazing finale to an incredible campaign for the league as a whole. And I think today, sun shining, I think the way the team responded in the second half is why we are champions.
Yes, Chelsea are champions again. Emma Hayes' team sealing a third successive WSL title courtesy of a come-from-behind win against Manchester United. 4-2, the final score at King's Meadow on Sunday. To mean the Blues finished just a point clear of second-placed Arsenal after the lead at the top changed hands five times in the space of a couple of hours. Flo Lloyd Hughes is our person in the know as regards CFCW. She joins us now. Flo, they made hard work of it, didn't they? But they got the job done in the end.
Yeah, they did. Shockingly as well. I don't think many people saw that coming, but I suppose it does sum up the last few weeks of Chelsea's season because it's been very, very nervy. That late goal for Sam Kerr against Aston Villa just before the international break. Then we had that really, really tense 3-1 win against Spurs in which Anker Schoenberger got sent off. Chelsea had to play about 70 minutes or so with 10 players. And then that really, really nervy 1-0 win over Birmingham where they got a bit of a generous penalty. But they did kind of huff and puff their way to the finish line a little bit. But yesterday, even though it was tense and probably not as calm and cool as they would have liked it to be, they still did it in style with Sam Kerr scoring two ridiculous goals and Gura Reitan's goal as well finished off a really, really nice team move. So, yeah, all in all, in front of a sold-out King's Meadow, Chelsea did it in very dramatic and entertaining style.
Yeah, we'll talk Sam Kerr shortly. So 2-1 at half-time. Was it an Emma Hayes team talk or was it the double sub of bringing England and Gion at the break which changed things?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think those substitutions did make a massive difference. I think it was kind of, you know, all or nothing. And I think Emma Hayes would have and kind of allude to the fact that she just really tried to keep the team calm, because I think they were panicking a little bit. I mean, Aaron Cuthbert said after the game that they weren't panicking at all. But I think across the last couple of weeks, I think there was very much a bit of panic among them. I think they were struggling a little bit and getting quite nervy and trying to force things a little bit. So I think the second half was just about remembering what they do best and playing the way that they want to play and be a bit more aggressive as well. And then I think they did unravel United a little bit, you know, moved them across the pitch, opened up spaces, especially with that Gyurcsány goal. I think that was kind of classic, you know, classic Chelsea at their best, moving the ball really quickly, finding the gaps, finding the space, losing their markers. I mean, Gyurcsány had so much time and space to finish off that move. And then the two Sam Kerr goals were more brilliance. But that lob especially, I suppose, was the Chelsea press really working, because latching onto a bit of a dodgy Earps pass, but turning that defensive approach into a goal scoring opportunity. I think, you know, those two goals really summed up Chelsea at their best and probably is what Emma Hayes wanted to see from them in the second half.
Flo, you're not bad in front of goal, I'm sure, but Sam's our expert. So let's bring him in at this point and just give some love to Sam Kerr, please, Sam Parkin, because as Flo says, I mean, that second goal in particular was a proper goosebumps, hairs on the back of your neck. How on earth has she done that kind of goal?
Yeah, lots of different components, I suppose. I saw her, you know, speaking about the psychology of goal scoring and visualization and stuff like that, which I think's become, yeah, a big part of strikers' kind of game as well in the last few years. I love the weight of that finish, I suppose, to be able to execute it on the volley. Brilliant awareness, but then it's the weight. It's absolutely perfect, and that's the toughest, I think, to execute that skill. So yeah, brilliant goal. The first wasn't bad either, but that one's, you know, right up there in terms of the ones that she's produced this season.
Flo, I know you were kind of questioning her winning the Player of the Year, not so much for her not deserving it, but maybe other people having had better seasons. But in terms of influencers on a team, there can't be many, if any, players in the league this season who've been so significant for their club as Kerr has.
Yeah, and I think what's probably so brilliant about her is she always wants to do it in style. She never really does it the easy way. She always really wants to put on a show. And I think yesterday kind of was the ultimate. I mean, there was so much discussion about when she came over to this league, whether she would be able to tough it out and get used to the physicality and just get used to playing in England. And I think it wasn't about how good she was as a player, but it was about finishing the chances that came her way. But I think what she's done over the last couple of years is build that efficiency, but also just showcase why she was such a big name in the first place, why she commanded such a big pay packet up until Pernille Harder arrived at Chelsea. She was, you know, one of the most expensive players in women's football. And I think she has kind of displayed why she is one of the biggest names in football in the world, why she's been on Nike billboards since she was about 15, 16. This is why, you know, she's a born entertainer. She's a big personality on and off the pitch. And there's no better example of that than saving some of the best goals of your career for the final day of the domestic season. Yeah, I think she's kind of proved why she is a big draw. And I think even though, like you said, she's had a very good season, her numbers are still ridiculous. And she had scored some important goals, that FA Cup final. I know you were there, Matt, in December, and then that big goal against Aston Villa. But it felt like, in terms of showcasing kind of the best growth, the best consistency, Beth Mead, you know, maybe deserved that Football Writers Association award. But certainly, on the back of yesterday's performance, Sam Kerr is hands down, you know, well earned that trophy.
Hi, Flo. Just want to talk about Emma Hayes briefly. She was asked sort of post-match where this title ranks and she sort of seemed to indicate it was the best. But of course, emotions run high after a game. You can sort of say these kind of things. Just wondering whether you agree that given all the distractions off the pitch that everyone at Chelsea has had to deal with, that obviously with the sanctions and stuff, whether you agree, and of course the strong challenge that Arsenal have posed since the opening day, and perhaps touch on those post-match pictures which seem to be trolling Arsenal a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it was, I mean, Emma Hayes has said from the very start, from that very first defeat, that result wasn't going to define their season. And yeah, they weren't, that title wasn't going to be won and lost on that game. But I do think, I don't agree that it's necessarily Chelsea's best, because I was, in my head, last season's win was more of an emphatic kind of dominant title victory, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best. But I do think what's happened this season in terms of what's been going on at the club, and also injuries, COVID, those things that Chelsea have really struggled with this season, I think that does make it a much bigger and better result. I think they were pushed more this season than they were last season, for sure. And I think for them as a group, that probably feels sweeter, because you've done it against all the adversity, against people thinking that, you know, you were going to be out of the race. But actually, bizarrely, the way that the title unraveled and how it all happened, it's kind of really the fact that Arsenal lost to Birmingham that really made it Chelsea's trophy, which is maybe a bit harsh towards them. But if Arsenal hadn't lost that game, they would be champions. So actually, it's almost like Arsenal were the masters of their own downfall a little bit. But for Chelsea to stay focused, to still deliver in the moments and in throughout the setbacks and those tight games that they had, like I mentioned, that is still impressive in itself. And that is the sign of winners, because Arsenal couldn't do that. When the pressure got to them, they crumbled. And that's the real difference between the two teams, I think. I think Chelsea haven't played their best football consistently throughout this season, but they brought their best when it mattered.
Flo, I'm not trying to get rid of her because I love Emma Hayes, but do you think there'll ever be a time that she moves on? Or do you think, and where do you see her future? And is it still just about completing the set and winning the Champions League? Will she remain Chelsea manager until they're able to do that?
They've won so much now, and I just don't know when that Champions League trophy is coming. I feel like it could be a couple years off, because I feel like Barcelona's dominance is going to be that strong. And having watched both Chelsea and Arsenal and City as well, when they were in the qualifying stages in the Champions League this season, I just feel like the gap doesn't seem to be getting smaller. So I don't think that Champions League title's coming soon enough. So I wonder if she might want to look elsewhere. But I just feel like they've got such a good thing going there. They've got obviously new owners coming in. They should back them. And if she can keep a hold of her big players for a little bit longer, I mean, who knows what more they could win. But I don't know if now's the right time to be looking at other jobs.
Flo, thanks as always. We'll speak to you soon, I'm sure.
Cheers, guys.
Chelsea, of course, can complete the double if they beat Manchester City at Wembley in the FA Cup final this weekend. That'll be a tough game there. We'll preview it on our Thursday pod. And next today, more drama.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Right, on Thursday, we looked ahead to the Chelsea under-23s must-win game against Spurs. You'll remember Andy Meyer's Young Blues needed to beat them at Cobham in order to avoid relegation to Division 2 of PL2. They did it, but only just. Simon, you were there. Tell us what happened and who you watched it with.
It was a lovely sunny day. How long have you got? It's the first time I've ever watched the under-23s at Cobham, and I wasn't really sure where to sit, you know, because, you know, you sort of
neither the commentators, either, Simon.
It's the worst commentary position, yeah, in ever.
But you sort of go, oh, is there, you know, is there a presser? And anyway, so I take a seat. I wasn't happy, so I went and took another seat, mainly because I could see the Tuchel, the players, etc., were all in the corner, so I thought I'll go sit closer to them. So I'm sort of aware of these people that I'm around, feeling rather tense, and as you'd expect. But I just thought, oh, I'll just strike up a conversation. I go, oh, so how come you're, you know, like, are you just Chelsea fans or whatever? And the lady next to me went, I'm the mother of number 11. And I went, it was like a bit of a, I just went, that's Harvey Vale, because I didn't have a team sheet. That's Harvey Vale. She went, yeah. And anyway, so it turned into this sort of great occasion where you're watching it with a family of one of the key players involved and live it, going through their emotions. And yes, I spoke to them sort of before, during and after. There's some lovely little nuggets in the piece that I wrote, which is about Harvey himself, that he'd been telling them, if I don't want to go down because I don't want to be associated with being the first team to be relegated, but also about how the first team players are, certainly earlier in the year, were saying, sign your contract, because they see this great talent that he is. But fundamentally, it was about Jamie and Colette Vale, the mum and the dad, their mannerisms, the things they were saying, some of the things I couldn't repeat in the article. it was a lovely occasion. And then getting back to the game, Chelsea toiled for long periods, barely posed a threat, went behind. You could feel the tension. Everyone was sort of, oh, no, it's going to happen. They're going to get relegated. Because they had to win, they had to beat Spurs to stay up. And then, to his credit, Andy Myers, the much maligned Andy Myers, brings on Rankin, Hall and Joe Hay, all within the space of a couple of minutes, pushed Chelsea up the pitch. They suddenly went aggressive and they started carrying more of a threat. It did make me laugh at 1-1 that Spurs started playing keep ball, as if to see out the 1-1 score, because that for them would feel like a victory to relegate Chelsea. So you can imagine the scenes when Joe Hay pounces on the keeper spilling a Mason Burstow shot to score the winner. And it felt very Chelsea Spurs, I have to say. Like, you know, it wasn't at Stamford Bridge, there wasn't over 40,000, there wasn't one step beyond. But it still felt, yes, very Spursy and very Chelsea against Spurs.
My weekly opportunity to blow smoke up one of the Athletic's readers' backsides. I read it, Simon, this morning, actually. It's quite emotive for me because there was a lot of it hit home, my relationship with my mum and coming to watch me at Chelsea and stuff like that. So it was a really nice read. Was the Spurs reaction at the final whistle, Simon? Was there any needle?
No, there was no Battle of the Bridge 2016, no Cesc Fabregas causing mayhem, causing a ruckus. No, I mean, I must admit, I'm going to confess, I wasn't really looking for their reaction. No. But I think they just trudged off looking pretty miserable at not being able to relegate Chelsea. But no, it was great. There were loads of fans, and obviously the whole stands were full of family and friends, and afterwards they're talking excitedly, you know, once they re-emerge. Should obviously highlight as well, Trevor Chalobah and Malang Sarr were played in this game, a sign of Chelsea's concern and desperation to get out, that two first-team squad members were involved. I thought Chalobah showed tremendous character and sent a message to Tuchel, who stayed for the whole game. It's great to see the first team support the under-23s in that fashion. But I thought that sent out quite a message, that because that must have been, you know, Chalobah's going through a really tough time for some reason, not being selected, only one appearance in the league for 2 months now. But he showed exactly what he needed to show, that being sort of playing this under-23s game, he played really well and was up for it and wasn't sulking, and, you know, he did his bit to help Chelsea get over the line. But yeah, fantastic for the under-23s. And as Harvey Vale's parents sort of said to me, this is huge, huge for the academy in terms of not just the players that are in the academy now, but the under-23s now, but the ones that might come up behind them. Obviously, Chelsea under-23s recruitment, or the academy's recruitment, it wouldn't have been a disaster if they'd gone down. It's not like suddenly the academy's rubbish, but it is inevitably going to have a little bit of a ripple effect. So for them to keep their place in the top tier is good, but clearly it's got to be a one-off. They can't be seen to be struggling against relegation. They're too good for that.
And finally, Sam, as Simon touched on there, big also for Andy Myers and your Bezzy, his assistant John Harley too. I mean, we've kind of mentioned the difficulties that they've faced this season in terms of player availability, etc., which was really a big factor at that time when a lot of players were getting into the senior squad. It's not been an easy job for them this term. The kind of assumption is you look at it and go, ooh, Chelsea finished third bottom, what happened there? But there are caveats, legitimate caveats, which you can apply to why they have struggled this term.
Yeah, I think we discuss it so often when we're covering the 23s. It's not, you know, it's cut and dry. This is Chelsea up against XYZ. They should win this 4-0, because you, from day to day, you don't know how many players you're going to have in your group. You don't know who's going to be out on loan, who's going to be with the first team group. It's a difficult job, I think. And you're probably gazumped quite often on a Monday morning by one of Thomas Tuchel's henchmen coming in and nicking two or three of your players. That's all the Youth Cup. The Youth Cup's coming around, so we're taking your Harvey Vale, Lewis Hall, etc. So, yeah, they can't be in this position again. You know, that's clear. I don't know what it will mean for the futures of the staff, because they seem to do like 3 or 4 year blocks, don't they? And then they move on to a different position. Obviously, Andy Myers had that spell at Vitesse a few years ago. I'm sure they're relieved. I'm sure you won't mind me saying we exchanged a few messages yesterday, mostly tough day and a few beer glass emojis. So I'm sure they felt the heat, you know, the last few weeks, and they'll be really relieved to have got the job done yesterday. And, you know, just Simon speaking there, the character of the players, that will put them in good stead. And also doing it in front of Thomas Tuchel. You know, I still remember that sense of Ruud Gullit or Viali, whoever else, you know, that was in the hierarchy when I was at the club, you know, standing on the balcony at Harlington as it was then. And it's like, right, I better produce here. So having the first team lads come over, that's pretty unique. You know, I know Mason Mount and John Terry in his day would have gone and stood on the touchlines at Cobham. But to have Thomas Tuchel and his staff there yesterday, the lads would have known that there was a lot on that game. So, you know, full credit to them for getting the job done. And hopefully, you know, that will have done a lot for their belief, you know, moving forward.
It's a really interesting one with the 23s. Not to promote another podcast, but Stephen Gerrard was on Gary Neville's, what's it called, the Overlap the other week. And he was talking about when he took the Liverpool under-18s job, and Jurgen Klopp specifically said to him, don't take the 23s because I'll just come and pinch your players all the time. You have to play the same way as we do. Take the 18s because you'll be left to yourself and you can do whatever you want with it, basically. So it is a tough job, that. So well done to Andy and to John and to everybody for staying up. Speaking of under-18s, Chelsea's got beaten 5-2 by the champion Southampton in their final league game of the season. They finish a disappointing 7th out of 14 in the under-18 PL South, but they did win the Premier League Cup last week. Simon, we've mentioned your piece on sitting with Harvey Vale's parents for that memorable game yesterday. You've also done not a to-do list, but a welcome to Chelsea list for Todd Bowley.
Yeah, it sort of meant very tongue-in-cheek because he sat and watched. I know he's been to see Chelsea before, but this was kind of him, you know, the first game where he's really on show, sitting in one of the boxes in the West Stand, watching his new baby, his new toy. And yeah, I just thought I'd I'd, with a camera sort of filming him quite a lot, that he'd be like, oh, Todd, this is kind of some of the stuff you're going to have to get used to. Or, and that included, don't get used to bringing shades to watch Chelsea games. The weather's not that good here. It's not LA. Romelu Lukaku doesn't always play like this. Timo Werner always manages to score a goal or have some goal involvement and it's ruled offside. Or in this case, we didn't even talk about this earlier, that I still don't think Sace was really fouled for that at all. He just fell over because he realised he was the wrong side. So, yeah, it's just very much sort of having a bit of fun whilst highlighting, yeah, perhaps you might want to invest more than 1.75 billion in the next 10 years on this squad if you want to make them Liverpool to compete with Liverpool Man City, because, yeah, as they showed on Saturday, they're a long way off.
Can't believe there was no explanation of Tenman went to Mo, et cetera, et cetera. Simon, do you think he's au fait with all that, is he?
Well, I must admit, I haven't heard that chant as that often these days. It seems to, perhaps you should make a comeback and, yeah, because it used to be a real staple, didn't it?
Yeah, and draw the line and explain in celery as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Maybe there's an Athletic long read on why Chelsea's chants for players are all based around 80s pop songs and how could we work some of the 1993 hits into your player chant, just to bring it full circle.
Boom shakalaka. Oh, yeah.
Elsewhere on The Athletic, you can read Michael Cox's dissection of Chelsea's WSL title win, and Charlotte Harper's written something on Sam Kerr and how she scores those type of goals all the time in training, according to her. Sam, just before we go, it occurs to me that this is a very Chelsea weekend. I'd say you and I are Chelsea sympathisers rather than Chelsea supporters, but even we have gone through the full gamut this weekend, right? You had wake up on Saturday morning, great, the takeover's nearly done, we might be back in full-time work soon. Come 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, why can't these players just hold on to a flipping lead? Then you get to Sunday, yes, won the league, yes, stayed up in PL2 Division 1. There's no other club I'd rather cover, I don't think, because there's always something going on and it's usually bonkers.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can't remember a weekend like this, really. And then, yeah, it's all a bit of a blur right now. And then we've got double cup finals, right, coming up this weekend. I think, and Lucy can nod here, I think I'm working on that. I think, thumbs up. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And, yeah, lots of playoffs coming up this... I'm ready for June. I'm ready for a lie down. It's been unbelievable. I can't imagine what it's been like for Simon.
Simon, you can go and enjoy the rest of your so-called day off now.
Well, I'm hitting a golf course, so that's a no.
Just remember to take two pairs of trousers in case you get a hole in one. That is where we're going to end it today. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up. If you could see the face that Lucy's pulling, listener, you'd know that I might not be back on Thursday, but some of us will, because we've got two cup finals to preview. Do join us for that if you can. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.